You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Colson. This is Minute 58. This minute opens with Charlie finishing his sentence, when we found what we came for, and ends with him about to tell Ellie to take off her father's cross.
We did find what we came for. They were here. This is...
the most significant discovery in the history of mankind.
Oh, I know.
Shaw is clearly perfectly content with their discoveries, but Holloway admits he wanted to talk to the engineers. Again, we see Shaw is the more mature and realistic of the couple. She didn't let her imagination and hopes get the better of her. She's a professional, and treats this mission the same as any other archaeological expedition. This ties back with what I was saying in the previous minute. Could it be that Shaw's faith in this instance actually allows her to be more level-headed? She isn't expecting to find God with a capital G. She isn't expecting to find the answers to life, the universe, and everything. She's just hoping to find whoever our ancient visitors were, and she succeeded. Whereas Holloway, Wayland, and David are all ultimately disappointed because they sought what could not be attained. A good friend of mine and listener of the show, who goes by the name Gray Malkin, said it best in a discussion we had recently. She said, "Charlie is definitely spiritually lacking. It defines him. I think the gist of my thought is that he can't invest anything with meaning the way Shaw can. It's something you have to be able to do from within yourself. The meaning may or may not be religious. That's part of why he thinks she's so special. He has to look for meaning from outside himself, which is why the dead engineers upset him so much." This makes for a much more compelling and nuanced dynamic than in the scripts. Shaw and Holloway are closer in age, and if anything, Holloway is more dependent on Shaw than the other way around. She is something he can believe in, something tangible that gives his life meaning. I like considering what might have been had Charlie survived in Shaw's place. First of all, the idea of David and Charlie trapped on a ship together sounds like perfect odd couple material. That is, if David bothers to keep Charlie alive. But secondly, I find it hard to see Charlie adapting to a life without Elizabeth. I think that would break him. Whereas Shaw is made of sterner stuff and kept fighting and kept moving towards the next goal. Charlie would probably have wanted to find the engineers too, so Covenant would play out much the same, but I have to wonder how this would change David's character. He wouldn't have his dear Elizabeth to obsess over. We see more of the apartment now. Shaw has incense burning, which is apparently perfectly safe to do in a spaceship. Another thing to show she's cultured and a bit of a hippie. We see a small collection of figurines or dolls in the background. We never get a clear look at them. They sort of look like Kachina dolls made by the Hopi tribe of Native Americans, but they're not quite as colourful. We have seen various tribal and historical artifacts throughout the ship. The set designers are clearly trying to reinforce the concepts of archaeology and history and all of that. Much like costumes, these set choices are subtly reminding us of what this film is about. You could see a random screenshot from this minute, and the message would still come across. Within the canon, we know Wayland has a fondness for artifacts. He decorates his living spaces with rare and expensive items that could belong in a museum. So it makes sense that he would decorate his ship in much the same way. These figurines, along with the masks in Vicar's room, are likely his. It seems extravagant. Either he pulled these items out of his personal collection, or he specifically purchased them for the Prometheus and placed them around the ship himself. But it's perfectly within his character to do so. There's a weird plant thing in this scene. It honestly looks like a pot plant turned upside down and attached to the wall. I don't know what I'm looking at here.
Their genetic material predates ours.
What the hell does that mean? I'll have to guess this is supposed to mean the engineers are older than humans, but if you break that sentence down, it literally means nothing. Unless you found some ultra-crusty semen in the engineers' bedsheets. In reality, there is no real way to determine specifically how old a species is. You can determine the age of a single specimen with relative accuracy, but evolution is slow and gradual, so it's not like you can draw a hard line between one species and another. In real genealogy and biology, when they refer to the most recent or last common ancestor, what that really refers to is the last common ancestor that they know of. It's all based on existing fossil records or a mathematical model. The age of a species is not written into its DNA. The only way to determine that is through observing the species in relation to its environment over a long span of time, i.e. fossils. On LV223, we have a single species on a barren landscape with some artificial structures. Not to mention, the engineers aren't even native to this planet. You might think, well, science and technology may have advanced to the point in which this could be possible, but I would argue that this is not a question of progress. There's no way to detect or measure information that simply isn't there to begin with. To quote the Arctic Monkeys, it's like a search for murder clues in dead men's eyes. Though, don't get me wrong, genes can tell us a lot about our past. Genes aren't deleted, simply switched off. And we have a lot of dormant genes. Now, dormant genes are not to be confused with junk DNA. So, dormant genes used to serve a purpose, or are even the remains of viruses we encountered in the past. We have our history literally written in our DNA, both our personal history and the history of our species. But if it were a history book, all the pages are unnumbered and completely out of order. To quote the Scientific American's article on junk DNA, in 2000, when scientists of the Human Genome Project presented the first rough draft of the sequence of bases, or code letters, in human DNA, did you know that's where Gattaca comes from, the G-A-T? I only realized that when I watched the movie, like, last year. I digress. Bases, or code letters, in human DNA, the initial results appeared to confirm that the vast majority of the sequence, perhaps 97% of its 3.2 billion bases, had no apparent function. The Book of Life, in other words, looked like a heavily padded text. Which we now know is not true. We understand that there are protein-coding genes and regulating genes. Really, there's no such thing as junk DNA. Life doesn't tend to waste energy on unnecessary features. For example, all mammals are born producing the enzyme to digest dairy. But most species stop producing that enzyme when they stop breastfeeding, because it's unlikely they'll ever consume dairy ever again. It's an expensive thing to keep producing when calories could be served elsewhere. That is, until someone in Europe, about several thousand years ago, looked at a cow and was like, let me suck that titty. I'm absolutely certain that's exactly how it went down. By the way, there are people claiming you can reactivate your dormant genes with meditation and minerals and herbal tea. Because of course there is. Oh, and while we're on this subject, I should say that DNA is what is found within genes, and genes are found in chromosomes. Though DNA and genes tend to be used fairly interchangeably, I try to be careful with my wording here. I am no biologist, so damn it, Jim, I'm a podcaster, not a doctor.
We come from them.
Again, how do you know that? There is no way to determine that relationship based on DNA alone. The best you could determine is that our species are related, but not how old either species is. We know we are descended from Neanderthal because we share DNA, but also because they are dead and we are not. Okay, there are more factors than that, early humans mated with Neanderthal and so on, but what I'm saying is it takes a lot of evidence. Also, the Smithsonian has a great website that breaks all of this down. I'll put that in the footnotes. Now, we could argue that because we know these engineers are at least 2,000 years old and way more sophisticated than we are even now, that they're clearly the older race. But again, there's no real proof that they created us, or even that they are older. It just tells us that we are related, and they are more advanced. I mean, for human beings, there are thousands of years where very little scientific or cultural progress was made. So, theoretically, there really isn't anything stopping a species from just progressing at an alarming rate scientifically. And this is all while ignoring the fact that we obviously evolved from ancestors of Earth. We didn't evolve from engineers, at least not in the real world. So I can give some of this a pass based on the fact that the entire story of human evolution, or indeed Earth's evolution, would have to be totally different in this universe. Even if engineers seeded all life on Earth, this would change everything we know. So ultimately, this is a detail that is so scientifically inaccurate, it comes right around again to be plausible, at least within the context of the film. But just to reiterate, her studies so far would only tell her that engineers and humans are related. That's it. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TravianDesigns, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.